Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Elijah by Eve Longley. Narrated by Veronica Fox. Chapter 1.
You actually located Atlantis?
I couldn't help but squeak as Tamara informed me they'd found the lost city, which was actually an ark sent by heaven. The heaven. And not a place in the sky, as indicated by the Bible, but some kind of super spaceship with a god and angels and a weird mission to seed planets so that they could collect soul juice when people died. As to how we found out, angels had recently arrived on Earth, upheaving our concepts of God, heaven, and hell. Lilith, my good friend and coworker, who joined us for our impromptu meeting, skipped surprise and went right to the nitty-gritty. Is the Ark still capable of flight? By Ark, she didn't mean the kind that floated on water. The Atlantis was a massive, spacefaring, living vessel. Convoluted sounding, but true. Seems to be working, Tamara informed. The Atlantis heaved itself out of the valley it was hiding in with no issue and, after taking care of that two-timing Jesus, took off.
Where did it go? I asked as I shoved up my glasses. I thought it was supposed to evacuate people before hell arrives.
As in the actual hell, which was like a mega spaceship or asteroid with a propulsion system newly arrived in our solar system. It wasn't common knowledge yet, given the space agencies hadn't spotted it. Once they did, though, I expected chaos and anarchy. The news wouldn't go over well. At my query, Tamara shrugged. No idea where it went. Noah said something about refueling.
Wait, when you say Noah, are you talking about the Noah?
Lilith lilted the query. One and the same. Noah, as in the Ark and the Flood and all that jazz. Tamara waved her hands. He's alive and not. My understanding in our brief time together is the Ark absorbed him, and they share a symbiotic type of relationship.
Damn, I exhaled. That's insanely cool.
Terrifying, too. You didn't see what the Atlantis did to Jesus Christ. Tamara's lips flattened and her expression turned grave as she explained how God Sion on Earth had betrayed them and tried to use the Atlantis to bargain for a position with hell. The Ark, which was apparently not only alive but sentient, took offense and blasted Jesus to pieces. In other words, don't piss it off.
Did Noah say when he and the Ark would come back? Because my greedy biologist mind would give anything to study it.
Not an exact date, no. He did tell me to start screening people for transport, though.
Screening them for what, exactly?
I wondered if I'd fit any criteria laid out. Basically looking for a mixture of young and old, of good character. No violent sorts, and he said something about weeding out the covetous, since they tend to cause trouble.
That's pretty vague, I opined.
Tamara rolled her shoulders. I'm aware. And the fact we can take a very limited number is going to cause trouble. Not to mention, how are the governments going to react? Lilith, who used to be the communication director at Novi, a company invested in getting humans into space, zeroed in on a big problem. Me, the person who dealt in biology, added another. What about the ratio of races? I assume we'll want to ensure we get a sampling from every ethnicity. To which Tamara sighed and said, which might be difficult given the ideology of many will outright reject anything the angels say. There will be accusations of false gods and even people who will welcome an invasion from hell.
Because people can be dumb.
It was true. I'd seen it my entire life. Just like people could be mean. I'd been born to immigrant parents, and despite the fact I spoke impeccable English, people often resorted to looking at my exterior to make judgments. It didn't help that my name, Cindy Lou, fit into their ill-conceived Asian stereotypes. Then add in the fact I wore glasses, was petite, had high grades, and participated in clubs that my peers at the time called geeky. By the time I graduated at 16 with honors, I'd heard every rude name in the book, plus a few extras. "It's our job to root out those who can't get along," Tamara stated. "The only good news about our task is Zakai says most physical ailments won't be a concern, as the Ark can handle minor issues. Additionally, once the reinforcements from heaven arrive with a new Jesus Christ, he can give them God's blessing of health." It still blew me away to know Jesus Christ was a job of sorts, and not an actual person. Actually, the way it had been explained to me, Jesus Christ was essentially God's clone, just a less powerful version. "Are you sure we want another Jesus Christ, given the last one turned out to be a turd?" Lilith didn't sugarcoat it. "We can only hope he was an anomaly. Can you imagine how epic it would be to have a true healer aboard with the refugees?" Lilith's brows rose. "Actually, that's not something we should advertise. Can you imagine the mobbing by the desperate if it were known miracle-level healing was available?" My nose scrunched. "Lilith is right. This has the potential to get ugly really quick. We'll have to make sure when the Atlantis returns that its location is hidden and well-guarded." "I'll make sure to reiterate that to Zakai, but back to our first problem. How do we start the screening process?" Being a bit of a jokester, I suggested, "We could post ads on social media." Lilith pursed her lips. "Because an ad saying, 'Looking for people who want to colonize another planet before hell wipes out Earth,' won't cause a panic." "We don't need to mention the hell part, do we?" Tamara gnawed her lower lip. "We could keep it more generic and say something along the lines of, 'Looking for people for an isolation experiment to test for long periods of spaceflight.'"
"Make them think it's a simulator instead of reality," I nodded. "That's actually not a bad idea."
"It won't be long before scientists realize the thing they think is a giant asteroid headed for the sun is actually being guided to Earth," Lilith pointed out. "Which leads us back to another problem, notifying Earth's leaders so they can help in the effort. While the Ark and even the ships we've been working on will save some, if word gets out we need to evacuate, it will give other space agencies time to maybe successfully launch flights of their own." "We have less than 9 months," Lilith reminded us of the tight timeline. "And that's just for the Hell ship. Aziel says they'll send scouts first."
Aziel being her angelic boyfriend, she'd been the first to make contact with the angels. Me, I'd now been hanging with them for a few weeks in an underground bunker. I still missed my cat, but it was better knowing my baby was being spoiled by my neighbor than the fear that had gripped me when I'd been imprisoned with no idea when I'd get back to care for her. At least the angels had provided ample distraction. I still hadn't gotten over my awe at their wings and the fact they could fly. I'd even mustered up the nerve to ask one of them if I could study his form. Elijah, a grim angel who rarely smiled, had uttered a flat, "No." But I'd not given up. I drummed my fingers on the table in the room we'd taken over for our impromptu meeting. Just the three of us for the moment. The angels tended to confer together and do their own thing. As for the rest of the people, aka humans, in the bunker, we wanted to hold off telling them about the Atlantis, because if Jesus Christ could be turned to the dark side, then chances were we had at least a few potentials in our own group that would betray. "I'm going to devise some tests to try and weed out those who think with their fists and show selfish traits. Lilith, can you figure out how to get people to apply without causing panic?" Tamara offered a task to Lilith, leaving me wondering what I could do to help.
"What about me?"
I asked.
"You're in charge of flora. We need as many varieties of seeds as possible. A new planet might lack the proper nutrition, so we'll all want fauna as well from every type. Fish, birds, mammals, reptiles." I frowned. "Given we'll need more than a single mating pair, that will take much room." Tamara's lips curved. Actually, according to Zakai, we don't need the creatures themselves, just the eggs and sperm to make them.
I couldn't help but blurt out, are they going to do the same thing with humans?
Would no one actually be saved, just their genetics? Tamara's lips turned down. While the Ark will take some people to ensure species continuity, yes, there will be some harvesting of us as well. It's the only way to ensure we have a big enough genetic sampling to thrive. Keep in mind, in a world that numbers billions, only thousands of the currently living can be saved.
A sobering reminder. What chance did I have of making it?
We broke up our meeting with a promise to keep things quiet as long as we could. My mind whirled with the many things that had to be done. Getting seeds sounded all well and good, except for the fact I wouldn't find what I needed at a local store. A full variety meant I'd need to access the seed vaults located around the world, heavily secured places, which would require a ton of paperwork to access, and likely a solid negative reply if I asked to take samples. I didn't have that kind of time. Hence why the moment I saw the grim Elijah stalking through the halls, I planted myself in his path and chirped, "Just the angel I needed."
"Do you require assistance?"
I nodded. "I need your help breaking into a secure location to steal some seeds."
Chapter 2. The human female blinked at him from behind her thick-rimmed glasses and waited for a reply.
An easy one.
"Stealing is against God's laws,"
he stated. Did that send her scurrying in shame to pray for forgiveness?
Nope.
She pursed her full pink lips before saying,
"What if I said we needed those seeds because it's an emergency?"
"Why not ask for them?"
"Because then I'd have to explain to some very skeptical sorts that hell is coming to demolish Earth, which would lead me to being laughed at because no one would believe me, and insisting will most likely have me thrown into a hospital for a mental health evaluation."
He frowned.
"Why would they scoff at the truth?"
"The truth as we know it. But in case you haven't noticed yet, humans aren't always easily persuaded. Or have you forgotten how long it took Aziel to convince Lilith he wasn't a fake angel?"
"This is different. Soon, all on your planet will be able to see hell's approach."
"But they won't believe it's hell," she insisted. "They'll assume it's some new asteroid."
"If they won't believe the truth, then they'll die."
"According to you, what makes you think anyone outside our group will believe you?"
His feathers ruffled.
"Elion's warriors do not lie."
"They'll accuse you of lying about that, too. Then there's the horrible types who want to bargain with hell."
"Hell doesn't bargain. It takes."
"Again, they won't take your word for it, especially once they realize the evacuation plan is only going to take a fraction of the population. But that's not my current dilemma. While Tamara and Lilith hatch a plan to find suitable colonists for the Ark, my task is acquiring a wide variety of flora and fauna for the voyage and eventual colonization. Given the flora is easiest, I figured I'd start with that task first, meaning I need to gather unmodified seeds. We're talking no GMO, no splicing, but original strains, some of which are extinct now on Earth due to certain farming and pesticide measures. Lucky for us, most seeds can be found in secured vaults around the world. The problem being, I can't just walk in and walk out with what we need."
"I will not steal."
Elijah took the commandment seriously, even if his demeanor was more lighthearted than his companion's. He'd disobeyed once before, and it didn't end well. He never made that mistake again. She sighed.
"Well, that's disappointing. Guess I'll have to find someone else to help me."
"You are going to continue with this plan?"
He'd assumed saying no would end it.
"What part of we need those seeds did you not grasp?"
She huffed.
"Don't worry yourself about it. I'll handle it."
She stalked off, petite and pert in her snug trousers and shirt. Determined, too. He'd been observing her since his arrival at this hidden facility, what the humans called an abandoned military research and development base. For some reason, she drew his eye more often than other humans, and he couldn't understand why. Yes, she was attractive, possibly intelligent, even if he couldn't always tell, given how quickly she spoke and went off on subjects of which he knew very little. A warrior had no need to know how things grew, nor where his food came from. Until recently, he fed exclusively on ambrosian, a substance produced by their cantori, the living vessel they used to travel the galaxies. He'd since tried human fare and, to his surprise, enjoyed the many flavors and textures. The humans had elevated the consumption for bodily health to a level he'd never expected, and Cindy Liu wanted to ensure that they brought that variety of consumables when they left for a new planet to colonize. A commendable task, but he still wouldn't abet her in theft. A device at his waist pinged, a human contraption called a walkie, which they'd been using while planetside since they didn't dare use their halos. Short for Heaven's Astral Linguistic Ordinance, they were part of God's blessing to all his angels that provided communication as one of its functions. As to why they weren't using it, the halos, when activated, were a shining bright beacon to the demons on Earth. Seeing as how they were doing their best to keep this place hidden, they couldn't activate them for fear of drawing attention. He pulled the walkie from his hip and depressed a button. Elijah here. Find me in the weapons training room at once, ordered Metatron, his principality and the one in charge of the angels on this mission. Is there a problem? Possibly. I'll explain to you and the others once you're here. Metatron ended the communication. Elijah quickly headed in the opposite direction of Cindy Liu, his rapid stride ensuring people moved out of his way. The tunnels might be tall and wide enough for winged angels, but many of the humans were leery of getting too close. His glower probably didn't help. The training room he entered offered the size needed for them to practice their skills. Lofty enough, they could use their wings to do leaps and swoops, a padded flooring for the times they fell hard or got knocked down. It also provided privacy once they secured the door. No one would be able to listen in. Upon his entrance, Elijah noted Metatron on the far side of the room, quietly conferring with Zakai, recently returned from a successful mission, where they located the Ark previously sent to shepherd the flock left behind on Eden, aka guide the humans off the planet they renamed Earth. Aziel was also present, sparring with Muna and Eok at the same time, a testament to his skill. Then again, Elijah could do the same. It was why he and Aziel, along with Leox, who stood back observing the practice, had been promoted to archangels. They'd proven their skill at battle. At least Elijah was back in fighting form. Not too long ago, his wing had been shorn in a demon skirmish. Thankfully, Jesus Christ had repaired it before the Scion turned traitor. Missing were Jur and Hood, most likely aboard the Cantori, keeping watch on the approaching Hell Behemoth. He'd checked on it during a stint in the Echo Chamber, eyed it, and noted, while sections of it appeared to have expanded since their last known sighting, other parts had vanished, blasted, or excised. Hell found it easier to get rid of rather than fix severely broken parts. Or could it be someone actually managed to damage it? Elijah couldn't have said where the strange idea came from. Heaven's fighters certainly didn't have the capacity to do true damage to it. God wouldn't let them fight with mechanical weapons. They used their bodies, which left them vulnerable in space. The Cantori had no means of attack. The only thing of note they carried that could have been used to go on the offense, Heaven's Flame, a beam of intense heat that eradicated all in its path, couldn't be used in war. God's rule: cleanse an offensive building or area on a planet? Yes.
but use it against Hell's squadrons or the massive moving legion itself? Forbidden. Sometimes, when having a particularly bad day, he'd wonder, why? Because the rule cost angelic lives. How many Cantori had been blown to pieces by the faster-moving Hellscout and cruiser ships armed with deadly weapons? If only they could have fought, they might have saved some Cantori and their crew. But they always turned and fled. The humans didn't have that option, though. Only a fraction would escape this rock. The young, the wise, the fertile that could parent. Once the rest realized they'd be left to face Hell, how would they react? Judging by the way war had been perfected over the centuries of history he'd perused, it would be violent. The humans would use weapons of such devastating damage they might very well destroy themselves, trying to render Hell impotent. Given Metatron's recent secrecy and many absences, he had to wonder if the ancient angel, who once accidentally alluded to his age in a speech, had thought about Elijah's suggestion of mustering the humans to counter Hell's invasion. At the very least, it might slow down Hell's armada and prevent them from destroying the fleeing colony ships and the Atlantis. Metatron noticed his arrival and offered a slight head nod before murmuring, "Let us begin." "Should we say a prayer?" Leox asked as they gathered in a loose circle that included the Principality. For a moment, Elijah would have sworn Metatron wanted to say no. Instead, he offered a very pleasant, "An excellent idea. Will you lead us, Leox?" The angel knelt, wings splaying behind him, the ultimate supplicant position. With a rustling, the others shifted their weight before ultimately joining him. Leox began, "Our Father, who art upon heaven, hallowed is thy name. To your flock we have come, to deliver your word and to deal with those who trespass against Elyon. On this day, we ask your blessing as we guide this lost and floundering flock into the light that will feed the kingdom come, earth giving its life to heaven. Amen." A chorus of amens followed and the slither and ruffle as they rose to their feet. Metatron began without pleasantries. "As you all know, Hell has exited the spiral arm for this galaxy and is approaching the planet. At its current pace, we have 9 Earth months before its arrival," Zakai reminded, as if they didn't already know. "It doesn't provide much time to evacuate anyone," Aziel added, looking as grim as ever. The only time his angelic brother smiled was around his mate, a human named Lilith, the pairing ironic given how much they disliked each other at first. "I'm aware of the short window of opportunity to save some of the flock. At least there is a positive. The Atlantis appears fully functional. Has it returned?" Elijah asked sharply. He'd not heard any news since it dropped Zakai and disappeared.
"No," Metatron replied. "But the Atlantis has been in contact with Tamara and has informed her that it will require a few days of Astralia collection before it returns."
That brought a frown and a query from Elijah. "Why is the Atlantis speaking with a human instead of you?" Metatron shrugged.
"I don't know, but Zakai has a theory."
All eyes went to the slim angel who'd come out of his self-imposed exile on board the Cantori to help the humans. Although Elijah had a sense this change had more to do with Tamara than an obligation to the flock on Earth. The Atlantis and its principality, Noah, had a difference of opinion with Elyon. It appears they were commanded to wipe Eden and start over with a freshly grown flock. However, rather than obey, Noah had the Atlantis cut off communication with heaven and allowed the humans to continue as they were. Zakai spoke with more confidence than Elijah recalled him having since his return, from his abusive imprisonment in Dante's Inferno. They disobeyed God, Leox pointed out in shock. He wasn't alone. Elijah had learned his lesson when it came to not obeying orders. The choir and their ark disobeyed what they felt was an unjust order lacking in compassion for the innocent. They spent a long time waiting for Elion's retribution. When it didn't come, they went into hibernation when Tamara found the Betelus, an element of the Ark that allowed keyed-in holders of it to find its location. She woke the Atlantis. It saw Jesus' perfidy, which only reinforced their distrust of heaven, hence why they have chosen Tamara as their conduit for communication. Zakai spread his hands. While not ideal, it is better than the alternative. An allusion to the fact they would have had one less ark to reestablish the flock elsewhere.
How many can the Atlantis take? Aziel asked.
No idea, Zakai shrugged. An exact number hasn't been given. What I do know is we haven't much time to make a selection. The Atlantis wants to be gone before Hell's scouts arrive. That raised Elijah's brows. Given how fast their scout ships can move, that could be any day now.
Which the Cantori is watching for.
Metatron paused.
We also have the Russian government and military involved. They have been briefed on the situation.
Elijah interrupted. Aren't the Russians the enemy of Americans? The country they were currently using as their base.
Yes, but the NATO countries believe it's just a giant asteroid heading toward the sun, and they're prepared to handle this without our help. They refuse to discuss nuclear tactics with us.
A reply that had Aziel snorting.
Because they're convinced we're not who we say we are. Lilith and I tried speaking with a highly ranked commander who accused us of working for their enemy. Much like my first encounter with Lilith, General Bellwether assumed my wings were artificially created, and that we were, in his words, fucking with him.
What can these Russians do to help? Aziel queried next. Elijah actually knew the answer to that since he and Metatron had discussed it.
They have missiles that might be capable of taking out Hell's scout ships once they reach Earth's atmosphere.
That's rather close, Zakai noted. Metatron spread his hands.
It is closer than we like, but we don't have much other choice. Their spacecraft aren't well equipped for combat. I've got EOC working with them to improve their current design in a time frame that doesn't make them useless.
We should be using Heaven's Flame to blast them, Aziel muttered. Leox gasped.
God says the holy fire is only for the burning of heretics.
Doesn't that describe Hell's minions? Aziel countered. Elijah, for all his devoutness, agreed with Aziel.
We are not here to discuss the theology and reasoning behind God's decree. What I would like to talk about is what we can do to convince other countries that Hell presents a real threat, so they'll agree to join the space defense endeavor. If they would listen and cooperate, they could ready a space fleet that could ravage the enemy. You think the humans can prevail against Hell's forces?
Elijah couldn't help his skepticism. He'd never seen anyone other than Heaven manage to strike a serious blow. Even then, they only managed to damage and slow the behemoth. Always fleeing, never managing to do real damage because God would order them to retreat.
Don't underestimate them, Metatron advised as he held up a device the humans called a tablet.
On it, he brought up images and flicked through them. Ranks of soldiers marching, massive moving armored vehicles blasting, flying craft shooting at each other.
Eden's flock is quite innovative and stubborn. Many will want to fight. The question will be if their technology can stand against the might of Hell.
Then how many...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?